The Motherhood Channel is your trusted source to provide in-depth information from UC San Diego experts focused on pregnancy, childbirth, and the first year of life. Visit uctv.tv/motherhood for more.
Thanks very much. In my role as also one of the co-directors of CORI, welcome to everyone. So glad to see everyone here. I'm going to talk a little bit about, not CORI here, but a collaborative project that my lab has undertaken. So this project, I'll talk at the end, I'll show all the collaborators, but include people in radiology, including Rebecca Reichel-Penner, who's in the audience today, people in pathology, as well as people in other institutions, including the Jackson Labs and Duke. And this is part of the Human Biomolecular Atlas program funded by the NIH that covers all sorts of different organ systems. We are the only group that looks at female reproduction. And I'll just talk a little bit about the placenta. We do study a few of the other organs in pregnancy, the fallopian tube, ovary, and the uterus, but I'll just focus on placenta today. Okay, so quick introduction to the placenta. This is a cross-section of the placenta. The placenta is basically a disc. This is a cross-section. This is the umbilical cord. This is the fetal surface. I'll talk about it as either the fetal surface or the chorionic plate, potentially, if I slip into jargon, sorry. Maternal surface over here or the basal plate. Down here, this is the what we call the decidua, the endometrial layer of the uterus, and this is the muscle layer, the myometrium of the uterus. The structure that I will really focus a lot upon is the villus. The chorionic villus is this branching structure. We refer to it as the functional tissue unit of the placenta. It's like where all the action happens pretty much in the placenta. And so we're going to really zoom in on this as we go along. Okay, so here, this is just a little zoomed in on the villus. You'll see there are many different cell types. I'm going to talk a lot about the cytotrophoblasts, these yellow cells, which are proliferative, and they give rise to two other cell types. The syncytiotrophoblast, which is in green, or STB. These are the cells that transport both nutrition, waste, oxygen, fluid between the mom and the baby. And it also is the site of most of the hormone production of the placenta. And then here, these ectrophilous trophoblast cells, EVT in red, they anchor the placenta to the maternal tissues, and they actually invade into the maternal tissues. They even replace some of the cells lining these maternal vessels here in pregnancy. So why do we want to study the placenta? Because we want to figure out, you know, what is the difference between placentas in different biological conditions? And today I'm just going to focus on some really high-level, obvious ones because we need to start somewhere. So before we run and look at disease, we want to walk and just study normal placenta. And so I'll talk about two main conditions. One is labor and not labor of the term placenta. And then I'll also talk about the placenta through gestation, through the course of development, through the pregnancy. And I'm going to refer to this table a bunch of times. And these are just types of questions we can ask, for example. What are overall differences, for example, between labor and not labor in the placenta? What types of cells are in the placenta? If you see a difference between labor and not labor, which cell types are changing? Or is it just that the different cell types are changing not in what their behavior is, but in the number of cells? So these are sorts of questions that, you know, we in the placental biology think about all the time. New technology is allowing us to not only see what types of cells are there, but who they're next to, what their neighborhoods are, and how they talk to each other, which I'm referring to as cell-cell signaling. So these are just large areas of questions. And I'll talk about the different technologies that we've used really quickly and what types of questions they can answer. So this is like old stuff now. When I was going to grad school, this was like not even on the horizon, but now this is every day. This is called bulk RNA-seq. You take a chunk of tissue, you ask what RNAs are in there. You can do this for placentas from vaginal deliveries and C-section deliveries, and then each of these dots is a gene. If it's in this gray, it doesn't really change much between vaginal delivery and C-section. If it's red, it's higher in labored placentas. In blue, they're higher in the C-section placentas. You can look at other questions too, like male and female babies. There are differences. There's like all these differences here. This is the Y chromosome. These are all the genes in the Y chromosome, not surprisingly. But as you can see, you get this cloud, you get lists of genes. You can do some functional enrichment analysis for people who know like pathways analysis, but it's still very big picture. Right? So basically, you can look at global differences. You cover the whole transcriptome. You can look at every RNA that's there. You can look at all the cells that are there. And it's pretty cheap, so you can do hundreds to thousands of samples. But you don't know which cell types are there, and you don't know what each cell type is doing. And plus, if you have really rare cell types, they get lost in the noise, right, of all of the different transcripts running around in your chunk of tissue. So you can answer basically two categories of questions using bulk RNA sequencing. All right, so you can then do single cell or single nucleus sequencing, and this is just one of the data sets that we generated as part of this project. And in this case, each dot is a different cell. And the relationship spatially in this picture is just which cells have more similar RNA sequences and what we call ATAC-seq or chromatin accessibility signatures. And here you can annotate the different cell types. So, you know, syncytiotrophoblasts, which I mentioned before, extravillous trophoblasts, those invasive cells, these tiny, you know, yellow cluster here. CTB, the proliferative progenitor cells, the cytotrophoblasts are over here. So, so you can get data on lots and lots of cells. This is 43,000 cells just about in all these different types. You can do some comparisons between different conditions. And I'll have to say that we just got data right off the presses on some different conditions, but I didn't get, the supercomputer did not work fast enough for me to share them with you. But this is just showing you that you can look at lots of cells at a time and get really detailed information about them. The advantages are single cell or single nucleus resolution, data from thousands of nuclei per sample. You cover the whole transcriptome or the whole genome, but you have no spatial information. You've blown apart your chunk now into all the individual cells, and you get data on each of the cells, but you don't know who they were next to, so you don't know who they were talking to. Also, super expensive, so you can only do usually dozens of samples at a time. So these are the types of questions that you can answer with what we call the multi-omic or single nucleus, single cell sequencing technologies. Okay, so this is the first of our spatial technologies. This is data that we generated using the GeoMx machine that's actually here, was here in this building, just moved to another home for sort of logistical reasons. But basically, you can take a section of tissue. So this is as if you had a pathology specimen, you cut it, and then what you do is you can pick out different areas and you can do sequencing on those areas. And in fact, you can do better than that. If you have markers for the certain cells that you care about, you can actually profile just those cells. So for example, we use PAN-CK, pancytokeratin, as a marker of the syncytiotrophoblast, and CD31 as a marker of the endothelial cells. You see these beautiful syncytiotrophoblast layers here, and then these beautiful fetal capillaries. You can profile them separately. So you can say, what do the red cells do in this picture? What do the green cells do in this picture? And you can come up with lists of these different things. Now, going back to the bulk RNA-seq, I showed you this picture. I'm going to highlight. There was this gene, aquaporin-3, which is higher in labor than in bulk. Labor than C-section placentas. But we didn't know which cell types they came from. Well, with GeoMx, we could say that they are higher in labor in the syncytiotrophoblast specifically. They're not in the endothelial cells. They're not in the stromal cells in the placenta or the extravillous trophoblast. Specifically, non-labor it's not on, in labor it turns on. So you can really look at individual genes, who's making them, you know, in that whole tissue. Another thing you can do is you can look at the same type of cell in different locations of the tissue. So if you look at a double staining between pancytokeratin and HLA-G, you get the extravillous trophoblast. They are in the basal plate, so in this area. They're also in the septa of the placenta. And they're also in two other areas of the placenta. They're at the chorionic plate, which is where the fetal side is, and they're in these other structures called trophoblast islands. So with GeoMx, you can pick these areas separately. And what you see actually is that if you compare the differences and similarities between those extravillous trophoblasts in these four different locations, they break out into two different groups. The chorionic plate, or the fetal side, and the islets, There's only 6 genes that are different between them, so they're very similar. And then between the basal plate, or the maternal side, and the septa, they're also quite similar. So you basically have 2 main populations, and you can actually identify markers that separate these populations from each other, which is actually, I think, super cool. All right, so in GeoMx, spatial information is preserved. You don't have cell type bias in your capture. It's also whole transcriptome. The problems are that it's not single cell. You need at least 20 cells of a given type to actually profile it. And as you might see, it takes quite a bit of technical expertise and a good eye to pick out which areas you want to look at and what markers you're going to use. So just highlighting again, there are, you know, other questions you can start answering, including spatial relationships with the GeoMx. I'm going to move on to another spatial technology. This is called imaging mass cytometry. So unlike the GeoMx, this is imaging. You see everything that's there, right? Cells, not cells, everything. Here, the limitation is you have to pick which proteins you want to look at in this. It's an antibody-based assay. Here, we pick 28 proteins custom, develop the assays for them. And here, I'm just showing DNA for the nuclei of the cells and 4 markers for looking at the cells within them. So this is, of course, very pretty. I love these images. But what can you learn? Well, you have to then go into a very complicated and sophisticated set of bioinformatic tools that help you, quote, segment the cells. So this is a beautiful picture, but where are the cells? How do you recognize cells? So we have a collaborator at Duke, John Hickey, who developed this segmentation tool called Mesmer, which helps identify the cells. And then it clusters them according to the similarity in their expression of those 28 proteins. And this is just another way of looking at it, where now we have the cells across the cell clusters across this way, and each of the 28 proteins this way. So a big dot means that a lot of cells in the cluster express that protein. A dark dot means that they express that protein highly. So you have both color and shape telling you about abundance of the cells in those clusters expressing that protein, and darkness, how high that level is. And basically, to me, this is the kind of figure to look at about 20,000 feet, because you just want to look for patterns, right? So you might want to say, well, you know, what's going on here? This type of cell is expressing basically this one protein. Well, these are B cells, right? If you look over here, this cell here, this type of cell is expressing basically only one thing very highly. It's tryptase. These are mast cells. So these are very rare cells in the placenta that normally you wouldn't see unless you had nice markers for them. You can also start seeing, we have syncytial trophoblast, but we have 4 different types of them. There's endothelial cells, and there's 5 different types of those. So these are the things you can start learning if you have an imaging type of technique. So for IMC, there's spatial information preserved. There's no cell type bias. It's actually very sensitive because antibodies are very sensitive. It can detect some very rare cell types if the right markers are chosen. The problem is that only a few dozen proteins can be detected. If you don't choose them correctly, you can completely miss a cell type, right? If you have a marker for a cell type that you don't pick, you're not going to see it. It's also very slow and expensive, and so you can't analyze that many samples. We did 4 sections of term placenta. It took us a month to generate that data. So I know Ina's here, and she has the next generation of that machine, which is much, much faster. We actually ended up, quote, breaking the machine at the Jackson Labs, and they retired it right after our project. They had to change the detector on the mass spec attached to that machine 4 times during our project. So, but it did generate beautiful pictures, right? So you can look at new cell types if you pick your markers correctly. You can see differences in cell numbers because there's no bias, and you can look at spatial relationships. So IMC is great for what it does. This is our newest platform that we've brought on. This is called Xenium. So this is an imaging system, very similar in idea to the imaging mass spec, except that it primarily looks at RNAs. So you can pick your favorite panel of about 300 to 500 RNAs. We did 300 because that was the state of the of the technology when we started collecting our data. We went through the literature as well as our multi-omic data and our genomics data and picked out 300 genes that you see here to mark the different anticipated cell types. So this is actually from our prior data. And so I'll focus here basically on trophoblast across gestation. So on each of these pictures, the coloring is the same. Syncytial trophoblast, that transport layer, is in blue. Cytotrophoblast, that proliferative layer, is in yellow. These light blue are actually syncytial trophoblast on the way to being, cytotrophoblast on the way to being syncytial trophoblast, and then EVT, the red ones, are the invasive cells. So you can see in the first trimester this beautiful pattern of these are the villi. There's a continuous layer of the proliferative cells that then feed into the outer layer. And then you can start seeing here the STB cells just under or at the bottom here. And then you can start seeing the extravillous trophoblasts that are quite abundant in the first trimester. When you go to the second trimester, the EVT are much less abundant. You can also see that the proliferative progenitor cells are much less abundant. And in the third trimester, it's almost all syncytial trophoblast, right? So this is the evolution, the maturation of that organ, the placenta, through gestation, reflecting, you know, what its role is at each stage of development. And you can actually take these and you can quantify the different types of cells. And so you can see that transition I just described in words in this graph where the STB layer becomes more abundant and the other layers drop off over gestation. And so you can then do a dot plot like this and look at these different cell types across gestation, first, second, third trimester, and the fact that actually there are different markers for these cells. So it's not just the abundance of each cell type, but the cells are changing through development. And then finally, I just want to show this, this case because it's so beautiful. This is a first trimester gestational sac, basically in its entirety. So the sac is in the middle, and then the placenta that's developing is all around it at this stage of development. And what you can see is if you dive deeper, you can see this inset is similar to the previous set of slides. It's coming from this area. And what you can start seeing is there's multiple types of progenitor STBs, and there's multiple types of the extravillous trophoblast as well. And you can see that they are spatially changing. So there's one level here proximal to the gestational sac, and then other types of EVT that are more abundant later, farther out. And again, you can start looking at what are the differences in the expression of different RNAs in these different subpopulations. So Xenium, we're super excited about spatial information is preserved. Again, no bias in the types of cells you look at. A plus and a minus, it can see more transcripts than, for example, the IMC can see for proteins, but it's still limited. It's not very sensitive, so the number of genes it can detect per cell is a little smaller than all the other technologies, and again, it's very expensive. So again, things that it can see. One thing I wanted to talk about is right now what we're doing in the group is integrating all these different data to try to get a fuller picture. And so, you know, by combining all of these technologies, you can capitalize on their strengths, get over their weaknesses, and then integrate that to map the data so that you can ask all of the questions. All right, so I just wanted, last slide, thanking all the folks involved, several people in OBGYN, including Katie Fish and Marnie Jacobs and Scott, Lindsay Hewitt, Valentina Kayla, I saw them all in the audience, folks at JAX over here in the lower right, and then and their leader, Paul Robeson, Mona Parast in pathology, and then John Hickey at Duke. So thanks very much.